You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for listening and for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. Over on our Patreon page, you can find an updated cap sheet and depth chart for the Miami Heat post-trade deadline that excludes Tyler Johnson, Wayne Ellington, includes Ryan Anderson and their contracts and so forth. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm not here with my usual co-host, David Ramil. I'm recording solo on a Sunday night after the Heat's loss to the Warriors. We're going to get to some mailbag questions later on, and I'll play a conversation that I had with Bam Adebayo. That's all coming up later in the show, but I was there in Oakland for the game. And look, the Heat played well. Despite losing 120 to 118 to the Warriors, they led by as many as 19 points in the first half. Josh Richardson scored a career-high 37 points, including 11 big ones in the fourth quarter. Had that great steal and dunk in the final few seconds. This was Richardson's first 30-point game since the beginning of the season on November 3rd. And remember, Josh Richardson at the beginning of the year was Miami's clear number one option on offense. More of this is good for the Heat. It allowed guys like Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters, Dwayne Wade to play more complementary roles. Especially Justice Winslow, who finished with 22 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. He was Miami's best defender against Kevin Durant, who Durant, anyway, scored 39 points. It didn't really matter who was guarding him. But it was clear that Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow asserted themselves tonight against the Warriors. They were the best players on the floor for most of the game for the Heat. And that backcourt, defensively, we already knew was going to be really dangerous and a big problem for opposing teams. And they gave Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson some issues, despite those three ending up, of course, being the leading scorers for the Warriors. The only Warriors, I think, that finished in double digits are really the only ones that made a significant impact offensively for them. But that's all you can really do against these Warriors is just make things difficult. And I thought that Richardson and Winslow did, as well as putting up, you know, Winslow 22 points on offense, Richardson put up 37 points, so it was good. The Heat got the Warriors to play their game overall, while the Warriors don't play as fast as the Sacramento Kings, who the Heat, of course, lost to earlier in the weekend. The Heat still managed to slow them down from their average pace, with the pace for the game being set at 97.9, right in Miami's wheelhouse. They controlled the boards, out-rebounded Golden State 50-36, but the Achilles heel again was the turnovers and transition defense. Miami committed 16 turnovers, and they were outscored 25-7 on fast break opportunities. Those turnovers, extra painful in a game with so few possessions. As far as the three ball goes, Miami tied at season high for made three pointers with 18. That plus the 48-34 edge in points in the paint resulted in one of the more efficient offensive performances of the season. The Heat shot 46.6% overall, almost 42% from three. And in that second half, the offense did stall or almost stalled completely, as it tends to do. That was a big issue in that loss, that collapse to the Kings. But the lobs, that lob game kept Miami's offense alive during what could have been a really bad drought. After the game, Eric Spoelstra praised Bam Adebayo for his screen setting, saying it's something he's gotten a lot better at. And that was the impetus of several of those lobs that he caught. In the second half, the Heat ran him through some of the Spain pick and rolls, but none of that works if Bam isn't setting really great screens and just darting to the rim with the speed and explosion that we know he has. And then, of course, it helped that he had Dwayne Wade throwing the lobs to him. Wade, obviously, one of the better guys in the league at doing that. Historically, one of the better guys in the league at doing that. Now, I know we have really the story of the game. Questions about what happened in the final few seconds. And I don't mean to bury the lead here, but I wanted to get all that other stuff out of the way because I wanted to make it clear that the Heat played a really good game. And then they kind of got screwed in this game. And that's the truth. If you've listened to this show in the past, you know that I'm not a guy who typically blames officiating. But in a game where Miami played pretty much a perfect basketball game, there wasn't much more that they could have done better. Maybe the turnovers, they could have cut that back. They committed 10 turnovers in the first half, only 6 in the second half. You take that at the end of the day, especially against the Warriors, who like to force those turnovers. But they played a great game, and they kind of got screwed. Eric Spoelstra wasn't happy with how the officiating played out. He pointed to the free throw disparity. Golden State got 26 attempts. Miami only got 8. You know, the final few seconds were especially egregious. With the game tied at 118, Kevin Durant got away with a clear double dribble before putting up a shot that resulted in the offensive rebound and free throws for DeMarcus Cousins with 5.5 seconds left. Cousins made both of those free throws, breaking the tie, and that forced the Heat into a buzzer beater situation, which resulted in even more issues because, as Taylor writes in, I thought that last play Spo drew up was supposed to go to Josh Richardson in the corner, but he was bumped off his path and knocked off balance. The 5-second clock was about up, and the Heat had to get the ball in, and Waiters was open. What are your thoughts? I think that Richardson was bumped, and Spoelstra said after the game that that play, and they've ran that play out of timeouts and at the end of games a lot, quite often this season. Basically, it has the primary option, which in this case was Josh Richardson, and a lot of times it's Josh Richardson. You have that primary option coming down the baseline, supposed to roll back up along the three-point arc, get the ball, and he's kind of in motion, and he's able to come off of a screen. There was a pin down that also freed up Dion Waiters, and he was a secondary option, okay? So Spoelstra said that Richardson was the primary option. He got bumped, and so they had to go to the second option, and that was Dion Waiters, and that's how those plays are oftentimes drawn up. You have more than one option. That's the most effective way to do that in case something like that happens. Now, they didn't call anything. I thought that it was pretty clear that Richardson got bumped by the Warriors, but for the most part at the end of games, I'm okay with that. I don't think that the bump there, I don't think that that's enough at the end of games to call it. Now, I know that the NBA has really been emphasizing these freedom of movement rules. So in that case, if you really want to make that the emphasis, I suppose you have to call it. But on the inbound there, it was kind of, in the moment right there live, it kind of just looked like he fell. It didn't look like the Warriors did it on purpose. It really didn't look too much like a foul. I really didn't think about it too much until I saw the replay. So ultimately, Waiters got a good look. I thought the look was, like, that was a good look for Dion. Like, at the end of the day, yeah, he was kind of falling away from the corner, but it could have been worse. You know, at least he got a shot off. To me, I go back to that just blatant double dribble by Kevin Durant. He wasn't in traffic. There wasn't anything blocking the ref's view. He was standing right there, and it was just an obvious double dribble. It wasn't a palming. It was a double dribble, and he didn't get called for it. And what ended up happening was they could have called him for it. It would have forced the turnover there. Miami, with the game tied at 118, would have also had more than 5.5 seconds left to get a good shot off. So even not calling the double dribble not only gave the Warriors the lead ultimately, but it also took away precious seconds off the game clock for the Heat to actually run a better play. They would have gotten a more efficient and a more effective play called at the end there. If the refs would have just done the right thing and called that a double dribble on Durant. We're going to take some of your mailbag questions. Apparently some of you are still upset with Eric Spoelstra's rotations. We'll do that after this break. What's up, Heat fans? We've got a special announcement. We're going to be giving away a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to a lucky fan. All you have to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Take a screenshot of both and email it to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Once we get to 150 iTunes reviews and 1,500 followers on Twitter, we'll randomly select someone to send a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to. You get to decide the style and the size. Once we get to 150 and 1,500, we will cut off submissions, so do it now. A D-Wade World Tour t-shirt could be yours for free. Let's get to some of the mailbag questions that we usually do on Mondays. This one comes from PJ. So can we just give Ryan Anderson all of James Johnson's minutes? At least he can shoot. If we're not going to play him, then buy him out and bring up the G Leaguers. This team's lack of direction is frustrating. I've seen a lot of questions about Ryan Anderson. Why isn't he playing? The Heat obviously acquired Ryan Anderson from the Phoenix Suns at the trade deadline. Stretch four kind of guy. Isn't shooting well from three-point range this season so far. But is overall for his career a very effective three-point shooter. I still think that we're going to see Ryan Anderson at some point. There's just a lot, like the Heat are on the road. They're in the middle of this tough West Coast road trip. They haven't really had a full-blown practice to bring Ryan Anderson in. And look, this isn't the 30-11 drive-and-kick offense anymore. You can't just put Ryan Anderson in the corner in that Luke Babbitt role and just say, stand here, make shots. The Heat run a lot of dribble handoffs. Almost everything they do is a set play. It takes a long time to get to learn that and to figure out the Heat's playbook, and it's very different than what Phoenix runs. So, look, I just think you can't just expect Ryan Anderson to play right away. He won't know what he's doing. Ron writes in, I watch every game, and there's times where Spo plays lineups at certain times where a three-year-old could tell it's wrong. For example, Kelly Olynyk and Hassan played well against the Kings, but Spo closed with Rodney Magruder, of all people, on the court, and we lost. Do you think Spo is throwing games? Only way decisions like this seems explainable. Again, I've seen this a lot. Eric Spoelstra, what's up with those rotations? Look, I know I've got, like, I know it's, like, kind of my thing to be the Spo defender. I know that's sort of, like, my bit. That's my brand. That's sort of what I'm doing here, I guess. But again, I don't think that he played the right lineups at the end against the Kings. He has shown to prefer Bam in the fourth quarters over Hassan Whiteside. So that's not new. That's not a new thing. But I do think Spo can be a little too rigid with his rotations. And that's not a secret. I think that he settles into certain things. And he just tries to go about that. I thought at the end of that Warriors game, it took too long to put Josh Richardson back into the game. Josh Richardson was Miami's most consistent, only consistent, really, scorer throughout all four quarters of the game. Ended up with 11 fourth-quarter points still, but that could have been 15 fourth-quarter points. That could have been the difference in the game. It was a close game. I thought he waited too long to sub Richardson back in. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have great guys out there. And a lot of it is matchup-driven. I understand at the end of games, chaos tends to ensue. The game starts to pick up in pace, and I get not wanting to have Kelly or Hassan out there at the end of a game, especially against a fast-paced team like the Kings. Although, ultimately, I thought he should have went with Whiteside over Bam against Sacramento, and I thought that he waited too long to sub Richardson in. But, look, I don't envy Spo's position. I've said this before. It's not like Anthony Davis is buried on the bench somewhere. The guys are the guys. And at the end of the day, I think we make a lot out of Spoelstra's rotations and lineup decisions, and I think we make it out to be more consequential than it actually is. This Heat team, there isn't some magic chemistry that's going to all of a sudden, there's not like this magic lineup that Spo hasn't tried that all of a sudden is going to just click on Miami season and all of a sudden they're going to go on some sort of run. That's not the issue here. The issue is health. The issue is lack of high-level talent, the lack of a alpha scorer. We know what the issues are. And I just don't know how much Spo's rotations are really going to play into the win and loss column. Okay, so before we go, I want to play you this conversation that I had with Bam Adebayo, the Heat's second-year center, who had a really great game for the Heat against the Warriors. After I talked to him, not taking credit, just saying. Anyway, here's Bam.
So Coach obviously rotates you and Hassan a lot, but you guys have very different styles of play, kind of from the lightning situation. When you get into the game, do you find that the opponent almost has to, it takes maybe a couple possessions for the opponent to adjust to the different center being in the game?
I don't know. That's a great question. I'm not in that locker room, so I don't know their schemes or anything. So, you know, I just kind of focus on my team and how to help them win.
I'm watching you play. It seems like, you know, when you get switched on to other guards, when guards get you on the switch, some of them tend to think it's like a mismatch because obviously like the one or the two on the five or something like that, it's not a mismatch. It's kind of your skill set is to slide on from there. Do you take pride in that?
Yeah, I think you should take pride in defending it, period.
Yeah.
So, you know, just taking pride in that, and we preach taking on the one-on-one challenges. So,
yeah,
you know, you just try to get a stop best way you can.
So when I know it's only your second season, you haven't been like super long, but are you surprised at all when they still act like you know, they call you for the switch and they're like, let me have it?
I don't know. I just do my job.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I was brought here to do, to, you know, do whatever, and it takes whatever for my team to win.
What do you say you most improved on between your rookie year and this year?
Being patient. I think D-Wade and like a lot of our vets helped me slow down and actually see the game. So just that's one big aspect, because that increases your skill set.
Right.
Because when you be able to think the game and play the game at a slow pace, or you ain't got to go 100 miles an hour every play, you know, it helps you. So I feel like being patient was the biggest thing for me.
How did D-Wade help you with that? I mean, I feel like a lot of that just kind of comes with time, but was there something specific he did?
Just him staying in my ear.
Yeah.
And being a great example of patience.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you ever watch D-Wade play now, he's ball faking. And so just him doing all those things and then just watching him from a younger player standpoint, you know, he's helped me out a lot.
You feel like you've done a better job then of being patient?
Yeah.
You feel good where you're at? What do you want to improve on now? What's your kind of your next point of development, I guess?
You can work on everything, honestly. So,
yeah.
You know, just everything, ball handling, dribbling. But I feel like reading the game is like the biggest part of my development.
On both sides of the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything specific that coaches are stressing with you in the few practices that you have at this point of the year?
Just communication.
Yeah.
So, you know, just being loud on ball screens, mm-hmm. getting everybody in a play call, making it coherent, just little things like that.
Yeah. Hassan was talking about yesterday in Sacramento how coach kind of wants him to play until he's exhausted. And there was a point, I think, in the third quarter, he actually called for the sub and said, you know, just play your heart out until you exhausted. Is that kind of the same formula for you?
Yeah. So I feel like he wants everybody to have that formula, honestly.
Yeah.
So we all go out there, play our hardest, and then when we're dead tired, we ask for a sub, or he'll call a timeout. Or sometimes he'll look you off. You know.
Like you're done?
Yeah, it's like... It's like sometimes they'll look you off and be like, look, you can last 2.5 more minutes. We're playing too well for me to take you out. So.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Appreciate it, Ben. Good luck, Tony.
Sure. Appreciate it.
That's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. When you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter @LockedOnHeat or email us @LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time.